This meeting is the men's breakout group, and obviously you can tell we're not using a microphone because it would go into the women's meeting, and we don't want to disturb them. So I'm loud enough. I don't need a microphone.
You might need to hear how it really works.
Right. It's funny. I look around this room. I see a lot of people I know. I see a few that I don't. For the guys that know me, they said earlier that don't give Ty a microphone because I blow y'all's eardrums out. So I don't need one. I'm going to share for a little bit, and then I'm going to turn it over to my friend Jamie, and we're going to wing it. If there's time left open, we'll open up the floor, and we'll go from there. So, family, like I said, my name is Ty. That's T-Y, not Todd, but Ty. Grateful to be in a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous. I'm grateful to be clean today. I say that with all sincerity because there was a time when it wasn't true, and I wanted to be high. So, I didn't really know what I was going to talk about, so I'm just going to kind of tell you a little bit about where I'm at and what kind of got me here. You know, while I was out there using, I started using, I was kind of a late bloomer when it comes down to using. I didn't start using it, you know, 12, 13, 14. I didn't start using it until I was like 20, you know, and kind of late in life, and I started in the casino industry, and that's how I got introduced to drugs, and you know, and that's kind of escalated from there. And you know, it was in the reading of how it works, it talks about easy does. We didn't become addicted in one day, so remember, easy does it. That was not me. I remember the first time I tried it, I was hooked, and I did it every day from that day on, and that was it. I found what I've been looking for my entire life. It made me courageous. It made me be able to talk to women a lot better. I had no fear. I always thought sleep was one of those things that I had to do because my parents told me I had to do it, but I didn't like doing it. I always liked to stay up late, so finding methamphetamine was great for me because I didn't have to sleep. And I always struggled with my weight, so having that, I was able to shed pounds. So I found what I was looking for. You know, and I used, and that's what it was. Jail is not part of my story. I'm grateful for that. There's days I kind of wish it was. Maybe it would have got me clean a lot sooner if I would have suffered a repercussion. I don't know. Maybe. Maybe not. Probably not. But who knows? What I can tell you is that degradation, remorse, fear, anger, pure hatred for myself, that's part of my story. Ruined relationships, loss of jobs. My career ended with the Chickasaw Nation after 7 years. And because my boss confronted me one day, he said, Ty, he said, I heard you had an addiction to Red Bull or some kind of addiction. Because me being the act I am, I thought I'd be really slick and buy one of those big-ass Red Bulls and carry it around to just make people think I was hyped up, right? Being really slick. And I got away with it for a long time. No one ever questioned me. You know, until one day they did. And me being the good actor I am, I said, no, my life is manageable. Everything's okay. I don't have an issue. And he said, okay. And I can't sit here and tell you if it was a day or 2 weeks or a month later, but I went back to him and I said, look, I'm addicted to meth, I'm also doing opiates and a couple other things, and I can't stop doing it, and I don't want to lose my job, what do I do? He said, well, you need to quit using. I said, okay. I said, okay. He said, can you do that on your own? And for the first time, I said something that shook me to my core when I said it. I said, no, I can't do that on my own. Because I've never tried to stop using, but I knew I was in the grip of it and that there was no way in hell I was going to be able to stop using on my own. I just knew that. So he said, okay. And they paid for me to go to treatment for my very first time back in 2010. And in treatment, I didn't go to treatment to get clean. That's not why I went to treatment. I went to treatment to keep a job. That's why I went to treatment. You know, and I did their little 45-day program. And met some cool people, got in a relationship, you know, did everything that I was told not to do. Rehab romances. For you guys that have been in rehab or for you guys that maybe you're thinking about going out and relapsing and going to rehab. Don't get in a rehab romance. It's not worth it. It doesn't work out. But she did do something that was really valuable. She said, hey, when you get out, go check out this address, 4740 South Penn. I said, what's that? She goes, it's SSRIP. I said, what's SSRIP? She goes, Southside Recovery in Progress. It's an NA meeting. I said, oh, okay. I said, are you going to be there? She goes, yeah, I'll meet you there. I said, all right, I'll show up. You know, perfect.
Hell yeah.
You know, turns out, I got that treatment. I went to this address, and I was met with love and affection. And as scared as I was, I walked in that meeting. I saw everyone hugging each other, and I'm like, whoa. Whoa! I saw men hugging men. I was like, what the fuck did I walk into? You know? I saw people laughing and smiling, and I was like, whoa, this is weird. And by the way, the girlfriend never showed up. Matter of fact, I never saw her again. Never saw her again. And damn it, man. Don't you love how that happens?
Yeah.
That's all right. I found another one. That's all right. But, you know, I got there, and they sent me down, and they gave me the 5 suggestions. And I said, okay. And I said, you know, it's all right. I don't really have... I'm just here to get my job. That's what I told them. And they said, whatever got you here, it doesn't matter. But if you stay here, your life will get better. And I said, okay. My life's pretty good right now. I had 45, 46 days clean. Thought it was good. They said, when are you going back to work? And I said, here in a couple days. They said, are you going back to the same job that you just left at the casino? And I said, yeah. They said, that's probably not a good idea. I said, no, it's okay. No, it's all right, I got it. And they said, okay. So I went back 2 weeks later. I was using it again because I was in the same environment, around the same people, doing the same thing. And then a year and a half later, my boss, by this time I want to get clean. So I'm actually trying to kick. I'm in my office throwing up in my trash can because I'm going through withdrawal. And he's like, time, I need you to take the drug test. I take my badge off and I said, take this as my retirement, here you go. Because I know that if I get fired, it's all gone. But if I quit, I can be quit for, you know, 60, 90 days and get my job back. But if I get fired, they're not going to hire me back. He talks me out of it and makes me take a drug test. I pop 6 out of 7 on the test. So they fire me. And that was the first consequence that I really had through my act of addiction. Because I maintained a home, maintained a car, maintained all that shit, but I lost my job. And I said, damn. So I went back to Southside, and that was November 10th of 2011. And I got clean November 11th of 2011, and I stayed clean for 4 years. Working a program, doing everything that we're taught to do, had a sponsor. I worked steps 1, 2, 3 a few times. Was really scared of the 4-step. Never went any further, you know. And living life on life's terms, I ended up going back out because I didn't work the rest of the steps. That was one thing. I had service-based recovery, not recovery-based service. I was doing multiple H&I panels. And I went into these H&I panels looking for the applause. Like, man, what a great story. Look at that guy. He's got a lot of good recovery. And I was looking for that applause. I wasn't doing it for the right reasons. Doesn't make me happy to sit here and admit that to you, but that's true. You know, I had service-based recovery. And I got in a relationship. I found my soulmate in Narcotics Anonymous. Her name is Hannah. And Hannah and I got together and... we got engaged. We were together for a couple years. We got pregnant. Make a long story short, she ended up getting a really rare disease called acute fatty liver pregnancy syndrome. When she was 8 months pregnant, all of her organs shut down in her body and she was put in a coma. She gave birth to my daughter, who was born a stillborn, so I lost my daughter. I had to cremate my daughter while Hannah was in a coma, do the funeral service with my family and her family while she was in a coma, praying she was going to come out of it. They didn't think she would. She was in a coma for a little over a month. She eventually came out of it. She came out of it, and her first question was, where's my baby? I had to break the news to her. It's like you gave birth and she was born stillborn. Broke my heart to sit there and tell her that, because the only thing she wanted was to have a child. You know, and she ended up getting better. She ended up getting better. Then she got sick again. And we were still attending meetings. We were doing everything. And when she got sick again, she got back put back in the hospital. And, you know, during this time, I wasn't going to that many meetings. I wasn't really in contact with my sponsor all that much. I would give him updates, you know, here and there. But I wasn't letting him know the real shit that was going on inside here. You know, I'm really struggling with all everything going on. I didn't let him know that. My main concern was her and her getting better. You know, they went in to go pull it, pour it out of her heart, and they cut an artery and didn't realize when she bled out on the table. That happened a year after my daughter passed away. It was born stillborn. So I lost her and my daughter within a year's time. I didn't know what else to do. I knew Narcotics Anonymous was going to be there, but I was so hurt. And I didn't know what to do. And after her funeral, I found myself using again. And I stayed out of the room for 6 years. During this time, I had other children. We had other children. And I was not a good father. I was not a good father. The only reason I have my children today is because my parents stepped up when I couldn't and I wouldn't. That's the only reason. And I thank them every day for that. I thank them every day for that. You know, I remember numerous times my children would come to the bathroom door, knock, 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 daddy, knock, 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 daddy, come play, daddy, I'm hungry. And I couldn't get out of the bathroom stall. I remember numerous times my daughter would crawl into bed at night with me, and I would get up and go to the closet and roll a bowl while she was sitting there sleeping in my bed. I was not a good father. I hated myself. Suicide seemed like a very viable option. I was too chicken shit at the time to try to do it. As much as I didn't want to be here, suicide seemed like the option I wanted to go with. And I thought about suicide for a long time. And late June of 2023, I finally got sick of the world. I got sick of myself. And I honestly thought that my children and my family would be better off without me. And I thought about Narcotics Anonymous. And I ended up copping resentment. Why did nobody come and save me? I honestly did. As bad as that sounds, I caught a resentment against Narcotics Anonymous. Why did no one come and check on me? Why did no one come and rescue me? You know, they said they were my family and they weren't there. They can't be there for me if they don't know what's going on. I didn't reach out to anybody in Narcotics Anonymous. I didn't do that. I had so much shame and guilt because I was well known in the recovery community. I had a job in the recovery community. You know, I knew a lot of people, and I spoke at a lot of the groups, and, you know, I knew a lot of people. But yet, when I disappeared, I didn't get any phone calls, I didn't get any text messages. And it hurt me to my core. You know, and I decided that the world would be better off without me. Late June of 2023, I drove out to a lake with a syringe loaded full of fentanyl, thinking about committing suicide, taking the easy way out. I drove around this lake for 4 hours, debating whether I was going to do it or not, not knowing what to do. And I finally hit the fuck it button, pulled over, tied off, and I shot up and I overdosed. I woke up on an ICU with a vent down my throat, with a cop sitting in my room. That cop... There was a cop sitting there, and I'll never forget it. When they got the vent out and gave me a drink of water, my first thought was, shit, I'm going to fucking jail. I don't want to do this. And I asked him, I said, are you here to arrest me? He said, no. I teared up, and I said, are you the one who saved me? He said, yes. He said, you were Narcan 6 times. Plus, we did CPR on you until we could get you to the hospital. They broke 4 ribs. I was Narcan 6 times, and I was put on life support. And as mad as I was, I said, "Why did you save me?" He walks over to me. He puts his hand on my shoulder. He said, "Because you're valuable to somebody, and you're worth saving." That's what he said. He got up. He left my room, and I have not seen him since. I've went to every Oklahoma City Police Department looking for this gentleman to thank him, and I could not find him. I don't know his name. I know what he looks like. Every police department I've went to try and describe this man, nobody has any idea who I'm trying to describe. So I look at him like my guardian angel. You know, I'm very grateful that he found me when he did, and he saved my life. Because I want to be here today. And that scared man that I was in active addiction, because Narcotics Anonymous has changed me into the man that I am today. And today, I'm proud of the man I am today. Today, I'm a man of integrity. I saw a $100 bill laying in the gas station floor last year sometime. This is the first time I'm telling the story, actually. You know, because I was told that when we do that, I don't need praises. If I do something good, just to do it. You know, I don't need all the accolades. But it kind of got brought up. But I found a $100 bill sitting in a Love's convenience store by the counter. It was just sitting on the floor. I picked it up, and without hesitation, I gave it to the cashier. I said, "Somebody dropped this." In active addiction, you think I would have done that? Yeah. Fuck no! $100 bill, that's a sack right there. Shit. That's a freebie. Shit. No, man. I wouldn't have done that. You know? I used to be so angry. I used to yell and scream and rage at my kids because they wouldn't leave me alone or they wanted something from me. They probably wanted my fucking time, honestly. You know, because that's what my kids want today. And today, my kids want me around. Today, I'm there for my children. I'm a man of my word. If I tell you I'm going to be there, I'm there. I'm at every football game, every cheerleading game that she has. My daughter had gymnastics competition today, but I had to do this, and I told her that I'm really sorry that I couldn't attend this our competition today. And she got a little mad at me. She got a little mad at me, but she understood. She said, "You promise you're going to be at the other ones? You're not going to miss anymore?" I said, "I promise, baby, I'll be there." She goes, "Good. Good, you better." I said, "Don't worry, baby, I'll be at all the rest of them." She goes, "Good, because I want you there." Wow. My children want me there. My daughter turned 11 years old on Thursday, and my home group, I have the best home group in Narcotics Anonymous. My home group is Living Room Group in Norman, Oklahoma. If you're ever in Norman, Oklahoma, on Tuesdays or Fridays at 6:30, please come by. We would love to have you. We meet at 1801 West Brooks, Norman, Oklahoma. We meet Tuesdays and Fridays at 6:30. Please come be a part of. We'd love to have you. I have the best home group. My children have been coming with me to this meeting ever since I decided to come back. And even before I went back out, they were coming. My daughter's been coming to this meeting with me. And the members there are like family members to her because they showed up. I invited them to our little house for her little birthday party, and they showed up. And they said, "Happy birthday, sweetheart." Because you know what? Their love for me overflows to them. That's blessings that I get in Narcotics Anonymous. The man I am today is because of the steps. Today, I don't carry around all that baggage of shame and guilt. I was able to unleash that in the fourth and fifth step. Today, I'm utterly aware of my character defects for the most part. And if I'm not, I have home group members and friends and family in recovery that will be more than glad to point out my bad shit. Because we are each other's eyes and ears. But they don't do it in a mean way. They do it in a loving, compassionate way. Hey, Ty. Hey, coming off a little hateful. I'm like, okay. Hey, I'm sorry if that came off hateful. You know, today, because I've learned, my sponsor has taught me that just because I feel a certain way doesn't mean I have to act a certain way. Just because I didn't get my way at Walmart doesn't mean I have to get on their little counter and scream and rant and rave until they decide to give me what I want. I don't have to do that today. I don't have to. It's a choice. You know, life is full of choices. And today, because I'm free from active addiction, I'm able to make these choices. Narcotics Anonymous has taught me that I can choose to be a man of integrity, and that's doing the right thing for when no one else is looking. I love Narcotics Anonymous. I love the men in Narcotics Anonymous. I wish we had a men's meeting in Oklahoma City. I would definitely go to that. Unfortunately, we don't, at least not yet. So if any of the guys here in Oklahoma City want to start up a men's meeting, just know I would be more than happy to attend that. You know, I got diagnosed. I'm gonna talk about mental health for just a second because I feel like it's important and people need to know that it's okay. I got diagnosed with treatment-resistant schizophrenia a year and a half ago. It's been a challenge. It's been a challenge. Being in front of all of you is making my paranoia go extremely high right now. This has been very challenging for me to get up. My anxiety is extremely high. And I'm probably fumbling over words. I hope I'm not, but if I am, please forgive me. Mental health and recovery go hand in hand for me. I can't treat one without the other. People in Narcotics Anonymous do a lot of good for me, but you know what? You guys are not fucking doctors, and you guys don't need to tell me what I need to do for my mental health. Okay? Unless you walk in my shoes, don't tell me to quit taking my fucking meds, because if I quit taking my fucking meds, I'm going to die. You guys don't get told to run your car into a bridge going 120 miles an hour going down the highway like I do. You know, I have a licensed professional psychiatrist that deals with this kind of problem. And there's literature in mental health in Narcotics Anonymous. It's got a green tab. It's IP number. I don't even know what it is. But I've read that. I've talked to my sponsor. And it's okay that I have a mental illness as long as it gets treated. As long as I'm treating it, chances are I'm not going to go out and relapse. Because if I don't treat my mental illness, if I don't treat it, I will self-medicate. And that, for me, is a relapse. You know, please, if you're struggling with mental illness, please feel free to talk to me. Or better yet, go see someone who can really help you. Meds are okay as long as they're prescribed by a professional doctor and we're not using them to get loaded. You know, my new clean date is July 4th of 2023. I'm extremely grateful for all of you. And you know what? I'm going to end this like what my sponsor ends with me and my home group. If no one has told you that they love you, I love each and every one of you because I can't do this shit alone. Thank you for letting me share. I'm gonna give it up to Jamie.
Hey,
all right, Jamie.
Okay, Hetty.
That's right, man.
Can y'all hear me way back there?
Give me a little slap for it.
Damn it, man.
I gotta get my literature out, man. If you guys were here when Donnie shared a little bit earlier, man, I'm a lot like him. I'm not as reliant on my literature as I should be. You know, as far as practicing a program and things like that, I still have a lot to learn, but I'm a firm believer in our literature. I'm a firm believer that our predecessors built this for me so that way I didn't have to fucking think my way out of this paper sack. You know what I mean? I just have to follow direction. The literature says that. So thank you, Ty. Thank you, Ricardo. Where you at? Yeah. Sorry, he's not. I guess he couldn't make it today.
He's on his way.
He is he? God bless him. He called and asked me to share, man. It's a huge honor. I'm gonna take a moment of silence to invite the God of my understanding in and help me get out of the way and share. And you guys can take the time to do with as you wish. All right. My name is Jamie. I'm an addict. If I stand real close to this, it's going to be stupid loud for the people that are listening. Anyway, whatever. I mean, in the end, it doesn't matter. Can you guys hear me back there all right? I mean, I'll speak up a little bit if I have to. Huh? What? Huh? I was fucking with you. I still can't get past, man. The fucking bees and the flies. They don't argue over whether it tastes better than shit or the honey. That's the best thing I've ever fucking heard, man. That's what I heard from this guy named Jeff. Man. Norman, Oklahoma. It's not like I haven't been to Norman Winter Convention before. You know, my clean date is April 8th of 2015. Yeah. Thank you, Jeff, for talking about that, because what it talks about, whenever I say my clean date, I'm simply letting you know that this fucking program is powerful.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It says in our literature we've never seen a person who lives in Narcotics Anonymous program relapse.
That's right.
Man. You know, the universal outer circle. The outer circle represents the universal and total program. There's room in it for all manifestations of the recovering person. It's so fucked. We'll let anybody in. Why? Because it works for anybody. You know what I mean? There's a lot more to that. But I was sitting here thinking, man. You know, I don't know what to share, right? You know, I talked to my sponsor a little bit on the way here, or yes, a couple days ago, and then right before I shared, and I prayed with my wife, which was cool. It's moving, very moving, to pray with somebody you fucking have such a deep connection with already. Sometimes, you know, a lot of times I feel distant. I mean, that's just me, you know. But I came here in fall of 1991. I couldn't wait. You know, I grew up in Broken Arrow, and I couldn't wait to come to the University of Oklahoma. I had all kinds of other opportunities. I came here for one reason, two reasons. One, because I fucking loved the Oklahoma Sooner football team. Literally, you talk about obsession and fucking just pure, I mean, everything. I wanted to come where OU played football. It sounds crazy, but it was my reality as a kid, man. And two, I wanted to party. and I had... It was one of those deals where they're like, man, I was in the honors school, and they were like, you got to pick a major. And I'm like, I hadn't even fucking thought about what I wanted to be. And I took this test, and they said, you need to be an engineer, you know. And fall of 91, man, and I was looking at this one, man. I was looking at this one in the corner. It made me realize what was going on in 1991.
Yeah.
Boy. Jamie H. was in fucking Norman, Oklahoma, very immature and acting like a fool. Starting his 4.5-year stint. That's 1994 was the fourth Norman Winter Convention. 93 was the third. 92 was the second. 1991 was the first. Right, so I think about that. And man, I look for fucking synchronicity. I look for harmony. I look for all these things in my life to understand that the God of my understanding has been with me my whole fucking life.
That's right.
Right? And that right there is an indicator. Like, as crazy as I was becoming, coming to Norman, right? The Norman Winter Convention was starting, so later on, I would have a chance to come and continue to share my recovery and continue to learn from people who are living life without the use of drugs and living life maturely, growing spiritually, being men, which, man, you talk about, I'm not an expert. I look old, man. You know, it talks about in Just for Day, and I might read a little bit, but it talks about feeling like a child on January 8th, a child trapped in an adult body, a grown-up body.
Yeah.
It was just 2 days ago, and I fucking was like, yeah.
I feel like that sometimes, man. I'll be 53 here in 10 days. And I sure as heck don't feel like it. Physically, some days I do, you know. But, so, you know, I grew up with an alcoholic father. Father, he did everything he could for me. He didn't beat me. He came and tried to support me when I was in my sports and stuff like that. I was embarrassed by him because he was loud and obnoxious. He took me to some shit. Like, he taught me how to bowl. I was a real fucking good bowler when I was young. He took me to, if anybody ever, you may know if you played softball when you were really young or what, but there's this group called Eddie Fainter, the King in His Court. It's four guys that would play anybody and beat their fucking ass on the softball field because the pitcher was so good. His name was Eddie Fainter. Well, I got to go watch my dad play that guy. Just a lot of cool shit. I fished in the very first $1 million fishing tournament in Eufaula. I don't know, they still have that fucking thing, I think. Just a lot of things, but my dad was an alcoholic, man, and he didn't have a solution. You know, and I know this in the end. One thing I didn't want to fucking be was my dad. You know, my brother, one of my sisters ran away a lot, man. They did a lot of drugs and stuff, and one of them, I took four bong hits when I was like 8 years old. That didn't make me an addict. You know, I got molested by the other sisters. That didn't make me an addict. I've learned that in Narcotics Anonymous, you know. A lot of things growing up, man. I think about, you know, in Who Is an Addict talks about the disease was present long before the first time we used. And I could just think about that being obsessed with those fucking little Chicago Bears helmets that are in the little quarter thing when you're going into the grocery store. You know, they used to have those little football helmets. Man, Mom, can we go to the grocery store? We just went. Come on. Can we please? You know? Or the video games. You know, going, there's a little arcade on Main Street in Broken Arrow that I used to fucking ride my bike up there. My mom knew where I was. I mean, it was either in there at my house playing Nintendo or something. And I was stealing from my fucking neighbor. I was stealing their, I took their $20 off their cabinet and cashed it in for quarters at a young age to play video games. That's why I call it digital dope, man. You know, that was me as a young kid, man, and I'm learning how to fucking just adapt. My friend's parents they did the best they could with trying to help me. You know, I grew up in a small house right off of Main Street, Broken Arrow. My mom, she gave me everything she could, man. Spoiled the fuck out of me with what she had, man. You know what I mean? Loved me like no other. My family loved me like no other. You're just something missing, man. I was just this little punk, scared, little redheaded, fucking freckle-faced kid that was way behind everybody else in maturity, physically, for sure. You know, I can remember having dreams. You know, I remember, I literally quit wrestling after ninth grade because I didn't have any fucking hair on my balls going into 10th grade. I wasn't about to take showers with everybody else and then see, one, that I had a little dick, two, that I didn't have any fucking hair. Fuck this. Let's play foosball and fucking eat white crosses. That's my story.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I was so scared to be seen. I had a dream one time. I remember I was dreaming, and I didn't have any hair underneath my arms, and I woke up and I saw some hairs on my and I thought that I had hair in my armpit, and I was like, yes, fuck. That's crammy, like just this. I was this little kid. Just wanting to be somebody else I wouldn't, man.
Yeah.
And I didn't know, man. I didn't know. I used to think I didn't use to cover up the way I felt. Till I think about that time in seventh grade. Me and my friends had told these parents over here were staying at this house. These parents over here were staying at this house. This house's parents were out of town, you know, and there's four or five of us. We're sitting around a bottle of Johnny Walker Red. I already told you, man, I did not want to be my fucking dad. By that time, I could smell it before the bottle was even opened because I knew what it smelled like with my dad. And my friends, they cracked that thing open. They started passing it around, and I wanted their fucking approval so bad. I wanted them to like me so bad, man. Just accept me. I'll do whatever. even before this, I used to, today's the birthday of one of those guys that I grew up with, and we used to fucking play this game where, hey, go back, and the refrigerator was in the kitchen. Open the door, you can mix whatever you want in the glass, and you just got to drink it real quick. And you only had so much you could. Man, I heard him hacking in there, and I fucking drank it anyway because I wanted him to like me so bad. You know? That's how much I needed people to love me, man, so bad. Even though my family still loved me, there was something inside of me. And sitting around that bottle of scotch, man, it's just, don't fucking do it, Jamie. There's my God conscience, right? Don't do it. I was taught right from wrong. Even Nancy Reagan about that time, don't fucking do drugs. Just say no. Just say no. Hey, it worked for some. Not me. And as it went around the line, man, it was, don't do it. They're going to call you a pussy. Don't do it. They're not going to like you. Don't do it. They're going to beat you up. They're going to make fun of you. Whew. Of course I did. And we destroyed my friend's brand new house and stuff. And I didn't, from that point forward, I didn't start fucking, bless you. I didn't start doing all the things that I did as far as like using substances and things like that. But that was, to me, an indication of why I chose to seek oblivion in the first place. Because that's what it talks about in our literature, is that oblivion was preferable. Like the present moment, right here, right now, what am I thinking and feeling? It's fucking me up, man. I can't fucking live right here, right now. So I need to do something to take me out of the present time reality and into oblivion. Right? And that's, man, that's a lot of things. Right? That's a lot of the substances that I used, a lot of the actions that I did. Sometimes the food that I fucking eat it myself into a coma, right? To exploit something selfishly is to use. And I didn't know I was doing that. These things that I'm saying now, I was completely fucking ignorant to. I grew up entirely ignorant my whole fucking life, just wanting to be cool. You know, wanting to be the fastest fucking skater on the rink in Broken Arrow. Wanted to be the best fucking player at Karate Champ. Wanted to fucking stay up all night playing video games. I'm gonna beat your ass at this fucking hockey game if you come over. You know, I stay up all night playing. Of course they got their ass beat. You know, I mean, that made me feel good. Because I didn't feel good about myself, man. Had no idea that I was that insecure. Thank God for the step working process, man.
Yeah.
Thank God for men in Narcotics Anonymous who fucking actually share honestly about being insecure as grown-ups. I'm like, holy fuck. And I was so scared to say it when I was young, man. You know, I came to Norman in 1991. I mean, I did a lot of things in high school. I graduated high school very high in my class and stuff. And I did graduate from the University of Oklahoma. It took me, I went an extra semester because I didn't quite study as hard as I should have at times, but I did well as far as my grade point average goes. I could have done better. You want to talk about unrealized potential that our fucking literature talks about? You go through and you look at how many, I mean, several B's, and those B's were fucking 89s, and all I had to do, it was go to fucking class. And the professor would have said, man, I saw you all the time. I'm going to give you an A. I literally went to one and tried to get him not to give me a C. And he said, dude, I can give you a D because you weren't here enough. Because I was always out partying, man, with my fraternity. So I say all that to say, man, that whole one simple drive from here, we left here, we went to this place called the Greek House. Great fucking Greek restaurant over off Campus Corner, if you ever have. It was here when I arrived in college. Right, I was here from 1991 to December of 95. And still open, we went there, great food. Drove by my old fraternity house, a couple houses that I lived in, man. Just talk about trips down memory lane, man. Just grateful and the what ifs. That you don't ring as loud as they used to, but it's like, what if I would have fucking listened way back then? What if I would have relied on my big bro to give me direction and try to help me mature into this man? Instead of fucking almost fighting him because I punched his best friend on his birthday my senior year. I mean, like, but I can't fucking get caught in that, man, because there's never a way out of it. It's a self-pity, man. It's a fucking tool of the disease of addiction. You know, one of the most destructive of defects, I think, is what it says in our literature. And so I can't feel sorry for myself. I have to turn around and look at the path that it took to get me right here, right now. Yeah. It's like, wow. Even the fucking bad shit was actually okay now, right? Because I have a chance to address that stuff, to stand face to face with all that stuff. And so, you know, fast forward, I got out of college. I got a career, blah, blah, blah. Next thing you know, I'm fucking making money. And now I couldn't get to Dallas quick enough. You know, here comes the things that really bring me to my knees, man. The fucking drug use, man. I start using drugs a lot. And I fucking can't keep a job anymore, man. And I finally, in 2005, I went to treatment the first time, got introduced to Narcotics Anonymous and Kush while I was in treatment. That in itself was a huge thing because I wouldn't have known to come to Narcotics Anonymous. Right? It was like an introduction. I went to, and I didn't stay clean. You know, when I got out of treatment, I didn't go to a meeting. Did the same thing in 2006. 2011, when things were really fucking getting worse, because I finally made my way back home to mama. I had to move back to Tulsa, I moved back in 2009, and then my fucking brother OD'd and died, and all this shit is happening, and I, at the same time that all this stuff is happening, I've got all what looks like I should be a man, and I'm still a fucking child. You know, what's to be a child? Well, one, to be mature is to be able to. I've gone through all these stages in life to where emotionally, physically, spiritually, and mentally, I've matured, right? I've gone through all these stages. But something within me, I like to call it the disease of addiction, has prevented me from actually maturing. As a matter of fact, in the triangle of self-obsession, it says, as acts, we never seem to outgrow the self-centeredness of a child. And I call myself an addict. I know I'm an addict. It simply means I have the disease of addiction, right? And, you know, I finally, and I walked in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous without treatment, whatnot. And I'm not saying it wasn't valid in 05 and 06. I'm just saying in 2011, I knew where to go. I wasn't going to treatment one more time, right? Wasting more of a fucking somebody's insurance money or my family's money. Let's fucking try to, because they told me in treatment, go to a meeting. Anybody ever been to treatment? They tell you, go to a meeting when you get out of here. I didn't listen to them. And the first few times I went to treatment, I got high within a week. And so in 2011, I walked in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, and I've been a member of Narcotics Anonymous since April of 2011, having been clean since then. Relapse is a part of my story. it's not a requirement. Never have to use again. Just for today, you never have to use again. You know what I mean? Our message is this. It's one of hope. We talked about hope earlier. But our message is that an addict, any addict, can stop using drugs, lose the desire to use, and find a new way to live, right? That's our message, man. If anything, just I'm going to say it again, too. But in 2011, I got a sponsor, and I started working steps, and I got introduced to the step working process. I got introduced to people like Dougie and Alan and Shane, right? You know, I fucking started learning a lot. Tyler, known him since then. And but something happened, man. We're in a fucking men's breakout. Like, at conventions and stuff like that, they usually call it the men's rap. The first time I heard it called, I saw it called the men's rap. I'm like, what the fuck are we over here? I mean, what are we doing? What is it, right? I go and I see some guy fucking sharing. Okay, cool. Well, then I look on the thing and it says men's breakout. I'm like, what the fuck's this mean? A breakout? I know what a breakout session is on a fucking Zoom meeting, on a WebEx call.
Yeah.
You know, there's a specific topic. You want to go to this room? You go to this breakout room. And so I'm like, okay, what the fuck does this mean, breakout? To forcibly fucking escape. Escape what? The prison. The fucking prison I built with my own mind, man. We're talking about the fucking prison of the disease of addiction. We here, in the men in here, are there any women in here? Sweet, the spies are not in here. Good. I'm being recorded. It don't fucking matter. Shit, I said. It's not little. It's not that little. I am married now. I forgot where I was going, man. Really, so let's just fast forward, man. I got to this point to where, in 2014, I was wanting a woman. You know, I've fucked a few girls here and there, right? And I knew that wasn't the answer. I just, it was something. I was trying to take things outside of myself, money, power, sex, drugs, all that stuff, to fix what's wrong inside myself, and that's my feelings. That's what the second step talks about. That's one of the ways it describes insanity. And I would lay my head on my pillow and I'd cry. Like, why do they have fucking somebody to be with? You know? I was too scared to tell anybody, man. I had too much pride, too much false pride, really, and ego. I didn't want you guys to know I was breaking. You know, and ultimately I had this lack of humility that I had was just, I wanted you guys still, I wanted your approval so fucking bad, I was too scared to tell you I was dying. And I started using again. I used one week before I used Thanksgiving weekend. My clean date that I was telling everybody was December 1st. It was really December 9th, but that's, when it comes to the grand scheme of things, it doesn't matter. I got my 3-year medallion in my home group, and then at that point in time, I was like, okay, good. I can tell people that my clean date's done. Well, before I do that, I got to use again. And then I couldn't stop. And went to treatment, but something happened, man. My sponsor at the time, his name's Buck M. He has now passed away. He died of COVID. He said, "James, carry our message and listen, follow the direction of the counselors." And when he said that, "carry our message," it, like, there was this sense of inclusion that was like, fuck yeah, I am a member of Narcotics Anonymous. I have two responsibilities. Stay clean and carry our message. You know, and so I got to go back to that same treatment center that I went to before. It's crazy. I called my work, said, "I need some help." The lady's like, "What's going on?" I said, "I'm smoking crack." And she says, "Oh, crap. Let me get the county." And she's like, "A fucking admin assistant." She's like, "Oh, shit." And the EAP coordinator, she's like, "Okay, what's going on?" I said, "I can't stop smoking crack. You're off work right now. You'll be in Valley Hill tomorrow." That was April 7th of 2015. And you know what happened? It's almost like I hear the stories of people getting arrested. And it's like, oh, fucking runs over, man. I finally was like, man, thank God I could finally tell the truth. I could have before. But the disease of addiction, it expresses itself in ways that are antisocial, man. It literally, on page 3 in our basic text, it says, we do not choose to become addicts. We suffer from a disease that expresses itself in ways that are antisocial, and that makes detection, diagnosis, and treatment difficult. I thank Tyler because he's the one that pointed out to me a long time ago in a meeting. He's like, it expresses itself. I can't fucking stop it. I'm powerless over it. And it was like a fucking light bulb went off. Oh my God. After all these years, one simple statement helped me realize what powerlessness meant. For me, even after working steps, man, even after going over a whole fucking section in our step working guides and whatnot, one sentence in one share was like, holy shit, you know. You know, it's so crazy because, you know, I ended up changing sponsors. My clean date is still the same, right? Like, the day that I walked into that treatment center, they told me go to meetings and all this other, you know, all. I went to a meeting the day I got out.
Right.
I went to a meeting the day I got out of treatment.
Still going.
And I'm still going. Most days of the week. Right. I'm not going to tell you I go every day because that's a lie. I try to. You know, some days I decide not to, really, to be honest with you. But I say that to say this, man. Those who keep coming to our meetings regularly stay clean.
That's right.
That's what my predecessors tell me. Those who keep coming to our meetings regularly stay clean. However, in Narcotics Anonymous, our literature also says, hey, recovery as experienced through our 12 steps is our goal, not mere physical abstinence. But in order for me to work the steps, I got to be clean. Right, Donnie?
Correct.
You know, it's crazy. This program, it's not a drug program, man. It's a fucking grow up or die motherfucking program.
That's right.
Yeah. Boy. I mean, this is what the disease says in the triangle self-obsession. It tells me that. At the end, man, I got to learn how to grow up or die. And all of those times, all the way leading up into 2015, April 8th of 2015, I was a child, man. And I'm not saying I'm all grown up now, but what I became was willing to look at myself and understand, son of a bitch, I need help. What's it mean to be a man? No, because my motto at my fraternity, one of the things that we used to say was be a man. Unless you're a man, you cannot be a brother. Oh, I quote that shit left and right. Fucking standing on pledges when they're on elbows and toes on cement on top of their fucking back going, say it again. I wasn't being a man at that time. Fucking ashamed of that. Absolutely fucking ashamed of some of the shit that I did. You know? There's better ways to teach men how to become men. And the men in this room, many of you, are showing me what it's like to be a man. Not because you do or don't have hair on your face. Not because you do or don't have some swinging dick. Not because you do or don't have hair on your head. How are you guys treating me? How are you treating each other? How are you responding to life whenever it happens? Talks about in our literature that one of the aspects of the disease of addiction is not being able to cope with daily living, live life on life's terms. My response up until I came to Narcotics Anonymous and started learning how to live by spiritual principles was always one like a child, throwing a fucking fit. Every time, whenever I work steps, I've had several sponsors I've worked steps with, right? As a matter of fact, four. Buck, Al, Toby, Buck again, and now Terry B. And every time I work a step with them, I get to realize my response to life has always been such a, like, I'm like a fucking child, man. How do I grow up, man? It tells me in the basic text right before step one, my only hope is to live by the example of those who have faced my dilemma and found a way out. Man, you know, I had got a lot of cool shit, man. I have a good sponsor. I don't use him as much as I should. I've literally been on a four-step out of the IP for 3 years. That's not good. I've been working on it more recently. I'm just a few questions. I got 40. Man, it tricked me. Motherfucker said, okay, list all your relationships. So I ended up with 42 of them. Then it asks you 92 fucking questions on each one of them.
Yeah.
So it's great. It's going to fucking reveal. As long as I'm honest, it's going to help me understand what the fuck is really going on. But I just need to work on it more diligently. But I'm almost to the sex section, man. You talk about a lot of fucking shame and guilt that I still have stuff down. You know. Things that I did to you know, when my friend's fucking in sixth grade, he's fucking this girl in the room because he's all physically mature. And I won't take my fucking pants off because I won't want to see him. As bald as that motherfucker is. And I still got fucking trauma from being fucking molested by my sister and by my fucking babysitter, right? You know, visions of that shit. Watching a lot of porn thinking I need to make every motherfucker just, I still haven't done that yet, man. I don't know about you all. I mean, some of you may just be fucking like, I mean, Alan's like, but to me, that's not being a man, you know what I mean? Like, my wife loves me, man. How am I treating her, man? It's these spiritual principles that's helping me grow up, that's helping me mature, that's helping me become the person that God wants me to be in the end.
Right.
You know, and I can't fucking do it. I can't continue to learn how to practice these spiritual principles unless I continue to go through the step working process. Because the step working process is genius, man. It breaks me down and builds me up all in one little step. And then if you look at the process in itself, you know, every step is a process within a process. There's a groups of steps that are processes within a process. But it's like, its fucking intent is to help me grow up. To help me build a relationship with the God of my understanding. You know, and I wouldn't have known that many years ago. I wouldn't have been able to tell you that I'm a long way off from being the man I want to be years ago. You know, I see gentlemen that are younger than me that are much further along in their development, in their physical selves and their mental selves and their spiritual selves, I think, than I am. At least I feel that way. But I try not to get too trapped in that whole comparison thing.
Right.
You know, I know the solution. Right. The solution's still just to look at me.
Yeah.
You know, so what am I doing today, man? You know, I know I'm going to finish with a real quick story about, like, a long time ago, I had a guy change sponsors years ago. I told him, don't ever fucking call me again. Don't fucking look at me in a meeting. You're a fucking idiot. I hope you get high. Type of shit. I don't think that's word for word. It was a good 10 years ago, I think. Maybe longer. I don't fucking know. I feel bad. He's not around. That's how I handled the feeling of rejection, right? Like a child, through a fit. Last week, I gave an assignment. We finished the first step. And I like to, as we finish a step, right? There are spiritual principles section at the end of the step in the step working guides. And there's a handful of principles that the step focuses on. Doesn't mean that's all the principles in the step. It just says, hey, we're going to try to keep it fucking simple. We're just going to focus on these. And then the first step, honesty, open-mindedness, willingness, acceptance, and humility. And I asked my guys, you know, because this was done for me too, and is incredibly practical, right? I need you to tell me specifically how you, Jamie, are going to practice the principle of honesty. And in these areas of your life, give me three concrete examples. That's where I get to tell my sponsor how I'm going to be honest. In a group setting in Narcotics Anonymous, in service in Narcotics Anonymous, and in life outside of Narcotics Anonymous. Right? And I do that for every spiritual principle. And when I did that, I was like, man, this is a fucking awesome, awesome, awesome assignment. And I've done that every step I've taken with my sponsor, and I've done that with the guys that I sponsor. And it's been awesome. Until last week, this guy decides, he says, what happened? Have you ever had anybody not do the assignment? I'm like, first of all, he texted me, and the text was all fucked up, so I got to say, I knew what he meant, but I was like, I'm not sure what you're asking. You know, I was dishonest. But he said, well, I'm not going to do it. And it fucked me up. I was at a convention in Kansas City, and I'm like, oh God, what the fuck am I going to do here? What am I supposed to do? Call my sponsor. I just called him. He said, hey man, here's what's going on, man. Here's what I want to do. Blah, 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 blah. He's like, okay, cool. Thank you for calling me. We talked it through. The reality is my gut is like, hey man, this is the way that I sponsor. This is the way that I go through the step work. I think this is a practical fucking assignment. We're not moving forward. We're not moving to step two unless this assignment's finished. I you know, that's it. I'm gonna stand my ground. It wasn't a faulty belief system. You know what I mean? And we got to have a grown-up conversation. I just got to let him know, hey man, you know, here's the deal. And he said, okay, well I'm gonna change sponsors. Saw him at the meeting, saw him at our home group, he had changed sponsors. I told him, hey man, I promise you, I'm not mad at you, because I'm not. You know, I've changed sponsors before, so I got to realize that, man, people, we are allowed to do whatever. We are allowed to choose different people to guide us in this step working process. And when that happened, I looked back on that and I thought, man, one time I have an example. You know, the second step in the step working guides talks about acting sanely in a situation where I hadn't before. Well, that to me was acting even sanely, but it was actually a sign of maturity.
Yeah.
I reached out to sponsor. You know what I mean? I prayed about it. I talked to other recovering addicts, and I was able to just talk face to face, man to man. I mean, he's like fucking way tall, so it's like, and not feel better than or less than. Just say, hey man, I hope the best for you. That's an indication that I'm starting to grow up a little bit, right? As far as being married, man, we're different people, man. I say we. I'm talking about women and men. You know, and my sponsor always, he just guides me back to, hey man, just give. Be patient. Just give. Practice the principle of goodwill. You know, seek to understand. Don't seek to be understood. You know, help her. Enable her. You know, and it's a lot easier for me to do that than it is to try to understand her or try to fight her or anything like that. Because it's a losing fucking battle, man.
Yeah, exactly.
It's absolutely a losing battle, man. It's difficult at first for me to set aside my ego and to surrender and to be a servant in that relationship. But it feels better, and it's the right thing to do, man. You know, and I try. I'm not perfect at it, man. But I know that when I do that, when I try to be a servant and I try to support my wife and enable her to do what she's going to do in every area of her life, we do better as a unit, and I feel better about the situation and our relationship, and it makes me feel like I'm getting closer to her rather than, you know, because, man, it's hard. I'm fucking been married for 15 months, and I still feel like I'm just slowly still opening up to my wife. You know, so man, I don't know, man. Anybody less than 30 days in here, man? Love you, Trey. What's your name?
Shaquille.
Glad you're here. Man, I want you guys to know, man, you never have to use again.
Right.
If you want to, if you don't want to, all of the things, man, just for today. You know, I know that when I try to think about staying clean for the rest of my life, it makes me want to say, well, you know what, then I'll get clean tomorrow. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is about that fucking shit, but I'm fucking crazy as all get out, but I found something in Narcotics Anonymous that I've never been able to find anywhere else. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with anything outside of this room, anything outside your fellowship or anything like that. I'm just talking about Narcotics Anonymous has given me, whenever I connect with it, right? Something I never had. Something I've never had. It's a sense of love and a sense of safety. Secure in the love of the fellowship. You know what I mean? And it's like, I know that it's difficult. I know it's tough to fucking, man, I got to do it again. I'm fucking coming up on a 30-day key tag. And I really, no, man, just for today. Just for today. That's all. And I've been able to get almost... Well, was it 10 years and 9 months clean? Because I'll do it just for today. I don't give a fuck about no colored key tags, man. Just for today. And it's great. I mean, the key tags are great, man. It gives us, you know, oh, shoot that safety at night. Just for today, man. I ain't going to fucking use any drugs today. You know what I mean? I ain't going to do it. You know, and by doing that, I give myself a chance to find a sponsor. I give myself a chance to maybe, just maybe, open up a little bit, to form a connection, right? And then I start working steps. Man, the power is in the program. The power isn't in the people give us the love, but the power is in the program. If I'm not working steps, I'm not going to be changing. But, you know, I could say a bunch of one-liners and stuff like that, but I want to welcome you guys, man. You know, I love Narcotics Anonymous. I made a decision a long time ago to become a member. You know, I walked into Narcotics Anonymous, and I walked into that circle. You know, that outer circle that denotes a universal and total program that has room within it for all manifestations of a recovering person, right? But when I said I'm a member, it's not just you're a member when you say you are and sound like a fucking pirate. That's not true. It says that in the third tradition. Once I decide to become a member, I need to follow that up with a commitment to the principles. So if I decide to become a member, when I walk in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, I step onto the square and I start practicing goodwill with everybody. It's really, really that simple. Don't fucking use drugs and treat everybody really kindly. You know what I mean? Seek to understand. Stop seeking to be understood. Fucking be nice to each other. You know what I mean? Don't listen to fucking disease of addiction, man. Just be kind. I know it's tough. Because I was an asshole for so many fucking years. You know, but I can tell you this, man. The minute I decided to start trying to practice goodwill and I tried to practice it, all the corners were rounded. The people became less confrontational. How the fuck does that work? Anyway, man. Thank you guys, man. I really appreciate your time, man.